Well, now to a story that has it all. Artistic flair and passion, obsession, possibly denial of sexuality and eventual decline. It's the story of the life and death of the contemporary Australian artist Adam Cullen. And it's written by a young and talented journalist, another creative, with whom Cullen fell in love towards the end of his life. Acute Misfortune, The Life and Death of Adam Cullen, is published by Black Ink. Its author, Eric Jensen, is with me now. He's perhaps better known as the former Fairfax journalist, who's now the editor of the Saturday paper. We spoke to him earlier this year. Welcome back to Saturday Extra, Eric.
Thanks, Geraldine.
Look, it's a really substantial achievement, this. I have to say, why did you write this book?
I think few people know what they were doing when they were 19, and this book is proof that I certainly didn't know what I was doing when I was 19. I started work on the book because Adam Cullen, the painter I was eventually wrote about, called me and asked if I'd write this biography. And it was only 3 or 4 years later, just before Adam died, that I started to properly understand that the book contract he said was in the offing never existed, and that all of this had been a sort of elaborate ruse to have me live on and off in his house and spend time with him and ask him questions about himself and become his confidant. And when finally he died, which was inevitable from the beginning but still was quite surprising, I looked at my creative notebooks and decided I better sit down and turn them into a book.
Well, you say, I intended this to be a longer book. That's your opening line. Remind us about the life and times of Adam Cullen.
Adam was probably one of the first painters of his generation. He was of the view that everyone who he went to art school with was making performance art and installation, and he decided that the radical thing to do would be to turn to painting. And he had a terrific and brilliant flair as a painter, but he also had a calamitous desire to end his life in destruction, and he did. He died at 46, leaving behind both some very bad pictures, but also some truly sublime pictures. And he I think, pursued that wish because he never really wanted his talent to catch up with him. He was always desperately running out in front of it. And he decided that addiction to drugs and to heroin and other things would be a surer way to see his life through than perhaps wrestling with what he was actually good at.
He's running away from a lot of things, and we'll get to that. And the acute misfortune of the title? What would you...
The very first time I met Adam was to write a profile of him for the Sydney Morning Herald. And at the end of this profile, he told me with some certainty that he was going to die. And before I could really say anything, he'd unbuttoned his shirt and showed me this enormous scar that sort of twists the length of his torso, and these huge, sickening pockmarks where various drain holes had been plugged into him earlier. And surprised by this as a 19-year-old cadet, I sort of said, you know, what happened? And he simply said, acute misfortune. And that sort of became, I suppose, when he called me a little later and asked me to write this book, its task was to explain that misfortune.
He certainly, in a way, he was always dying, I think, you say. As you take us through, I really sort of thought, where are you taking us? Because it was this scattergun set of observations about this man. I wonder how it changed you watching this unbelievably chaotic life with this self-destructive, the self-loathing, because we'll get to that, where you finally reach your climax. But what did it do to you to watch that? Because you hung in there for 4 years.
Yeah. Even as I sat down to write this, I was surprised to some degree that I'd spent this time in, you know, staying with Adam in circumstances that were often squalid and difficult. You know, now if someone shot me in the leg, I would probably stop working on the book. and if someone threw me off a motorcycle just to see how it would be, I would probably stop working on
the
book.
She did both these things.
But
he was dangerous. Like, there were guns around constantly.
And yeah.
I don't know how you weren't terrified.
The other thing about the resilience of the 19-year-old mind, or the naivety of the 19-year-old mind and the resilience of the 19-year-old body, is that it wasn't clear to me at this point that all of this was was terribly peculiar. I was new to journalism. I thought this must be what real journalism looks like. Turns out it's not. I was completely wrong on that score. But scribbling down shorthand and listening to what were at times truly intriguing rantings. And the better we got to know each other, as the sort of lies that had embroidered his life started to unstitch, I realised that there was a very complex character study to be written. Mm-hmm. And I had started thinking I was going to write a scholarly biography of a well-known painter. I think in the end I wrote a fragmented character study, a fragmented portrait of a life probably more complicated and unresolved than a scholarly biography could do justice to.
Well, it's certainly just the nature of what you write. It's sort of... It rattles your cage as you're reading it. He came from a long line of Irish tragics. But really, there was an enormous amount of alcoholism going right back several generations. He decided he didn't like or love his mother from the age of 14, a crucially important thing. He had this father. I felt terribly sad for him. I have to say, I don't know whether the father's listening, Kevin, but is Kevin still with us?
He is. Kevin is this brilliant, charismatic man who, you know, raised Adam with the most brilliant affection and maintained all through Adam's life this enormous regard and love for his son who made life sometimes close to unbearably difficult. And I think, you know, what you say, he came from this line of Irish tragics. Kevin Cullen is certainly not an Irish tragic. He's an Australian larrikin. And a brilliant storyteller and all of these things. The one document that, though, looks at that line of, you know, Adam's inheritance, I suppose, is a psychiatric report that was prepared late in his life. He was on a weapons trial and pleaded what we would now call insanity, would once have called insanity, is now a sort of dispensation to be dealt with under the Mental Health Act. And the psychiatric report, it's 6 pages, and it put down very simply what I think I'd been trying to do for 4 years. But it said, among other things, that, you know, much of what Adam had in his life, his struggles with alcohol and his bipolar, was his inheritance. He came from a line of drinkers and was cursed to drink.
But what I was going to say about the father was, here was a man who was effortlessly successful with women and who really screwed a lot of women and had no difficulty in dealing with women. Adam was very afraid of sex, you discover, and very anxious around it. Yeah. So he had this model of the real man. Yeah. And I think you actually put on page 130 here that he was almost stricken with machismo. That this man, in some respects, it was his father's machismo that crippled him. He's a real man, you know, actually a real effing man, Adam said. Dar is my hero. He can do anything, but I'm not actually that much like him. I'd like to be, but I'm not. He is this man, this real man, and I'm effing pretending. I found that incredibly sad.
And that's something that Adam said to me very late in our interviews. One of the things that drew me to Adam as a subject was this brilliant construct that had become his life. Adam had decided he was going to be the archetypal wild man Australian painter. And he did that very successfully, and he was brilliant at manipulating the press and at manipulating people and at constructing roles for himself to play. And I think when Adam said that to me, and that was probably one of the key moments in our interviews, it was the mask slipping off and you realising the machismo wasn't there, that there was a nervous innocent behind that mask, and much of his life had been trapped in his childhood.
Indeed. And then there is this moment where really it is the I've got my notes say climax of the book, core of the book, where, in my view, where he does finally reveal to you, page 154, where he whispers to you, hugging you, he's desperate for hugs, "You are the only man for me." You sitting opposite him, you finally twig, "Adam is in love with me. I ask if this hidden sexuality is the reason he has worked so hard to distance himself from society, the reason he's become so isolated, so resentful of the world. It's some of it," he says, and then he pauses. "It's an effing lot of it, actually." So are we really dealing with, and I don't just mean to distill it, but this is what, with a man who just couldn't face his sexuality?
One of the the two things I decided to do with this book. One was to record everything without moral judgment. I wanted this to be an unblinking account of someone's life, and I got very close to that life, but I never tried to judge that life. The second thing I decided I would not do with the book was speculate at all. And where Adam was unable to know what his sexuality meant to his life, I've decided that I'm also unable to know what his sexuality meant. Certainly, at the core of this man was a deep and conflicted view of his place in the world, of his relationship with other people, his sexual relationships with other people. And that bred a lot of his insecurities. But I'm not willing to speculate precisely what that did to his life. I mean, he said that it caused him to distance himself, and I think that's true. And it made him resentful of relationships that he was in. It made him resentful of women in particular.
Mm. And it's just unbelievable that a man so absorbed in the world of art, mm-hmm. so permissive of all manner of choices about your sexuality, should feel so terribly unable to acknowledge this part of himself. And that's why led me to wonder about this almost imperfect storm he had with his father, the father representing the male model. It's almost like living with Ernest Hemingway. That's what I felt reading this.
Yeah, I mean, I think Adam was keen always to create for himself difficulties. He was someone who wanted life to be complicated. It was quite deliberately that Adam sought out drugs in his life. They were a complicating factor that added him to a cadre of artists he respected. But there are also things that Adam wanted never to deal with. And this is one of the things that I found quite affecting working on the book and writing the book was understanding how someone who otherwise seemed capable of whatever they wanted and had great pride in the freedoms mm-hmm. that his life afforded. In fact, the thing that killed Adam most, I think, is that he had to stand up in front of a court.
Exactly.
And
I was just going to come to that.
That his life wasn't completely reckless and that there were ordinary rules that pertained to him as they did to other people, and indeed that his problems weren't hugely unique, particularly. They were quite ordinary and commonplace. And it was only a few months after having to stand in front of a magistrate and make that admission that he stopped playing his characters, and he didn't flame out as people would expect a man like Adam to. His organs simply stopped working and he died in his sleep.
He became desperately ill, but it was that court case and then the strip search by the two police officers that seemed to be an extraordinarily important moment. The pancreatitis that he had, and I've watched pancreatitis with somebody I knew years ago. Pancreatitis is so unbelievably painful, it changes people. And the psychiatrist making it so real. He can no longer ignore an illness, you say, that retrospect has defined his life. And this is Adam about the psychiatrist. He's actually a really, really sweet man, but I just don't think he knows me very well. I lay down on a couch, he asks what I feel, and of course the asshole makes me burst into tears about stuff I don't even think about. Don't even want to think about it, it seemed to me. So it was this burst of reality, of real life creeping in, that he couldn't avoid any longer. The law imposed itself. It seems to have been the turning point.
I really think so. I mean, this was not Adam's first encounter with the law. By the time he was on this weapons trial, he'd had 8 drink driving offences beforehand and been involved in various AVOs and so on. He was a man fascinated by transgression and by violence, and this caused him to encounter the law with more frequency than an ordinary person might. But he really was hollowed out by reality. This was someone who had lived on his own terms, not necessarily as a fabulist, but as someone who enjoyed manipulation, enjoyed storytelling, enjoyed lying. And when he was no longer able to do that and had to look at himself in the mirror, I felt it was almost like that moment at the end of The Wizard of Oz where the curtain parts mm-hmm. and you realise that Oz is a little man with a microphone.
The Emperor realises he really has no clothes, possibly. Do you think for yourself, would he have produced the art if he had been a more resolved man?
I don't think so. I think it's easy to lose focus on what Adam's art was about because so much of it was brash. But the kernel of his best works is a depiction of childhood innocence as it encounters the malevolence of adulthood. And Adam lived his life on that precipice. He loved those malevolent moments, but for him it was never truly evil. It was like a six-year-old killing a lizard with his friends to see what it would be like. And he would have these moments of true childlike innocence. He was unresolved in that respect. And I don't think he would have made his pictures if he had have resolved that innocence. And I don't think he would have made those pictures if he wasn't also fascinated with the darkness that exists in adulthood.
That's why I'm not a great artist, because living like that just sounds like total horror. Look, it's a really considerable achievement, Eric. It certainly does trouble one. But congratulations on an acute misfortune, the life and death of Adam Cullen. It's been terrific to talk to you.
Thanks very much, Geraldine.
It's a Black Ink publication, and look, it's not like a lot of things that you will have read before. It's worth reading.